accession number 103 98 5.
Mrs. Pomeroy, reel 5. So, you were telling me about how conditions were deteriorating under the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Could you say more?
Well, because of the deterioration of conditions, more people were joining the Hukbalhap. In fact, the Hukbalhap became such a strong guerrilla force that the Japanese were not only frightened and became fearful of the Hukbalhap, but after the war, even the even the American forces became afraid of the Hukbalhap, because they learned, or they already knew, that the Hukbalhap was led by the Communist Party of the Philippines. And while they had a great admiration for the Hukbalhap, yet they wanted to destroy it. You know, the Hukbalhap was so strong that when the Americans came in 1945, December of 1945, they entered 1944, I think, the end of 1944. They entered through Lingayen Gulf, and they expected resistance from the Japanese. But when they passed Central Luzon, the way was clear for them, because the Hukbalhap forces has already wiped out the Japanese wherever they would pass. And they went unencumbered from Central Luzon to Manila. And when they came to Manila, some of our forces helped them, so that they could not help but recognize the work that the Hukbalhap has done. In fact, they recognized two of our regiments. One is under Comrade Banal, and one is under Comrade Dimasalang. Comrade Dimasalang. They had to give these people remuneration. You know?
Did you see the entry of American forces yourself into Luzon?
No. But I knew when they were coming, because comrades were telling us. And in fact, we caught a Japanese doctor. I met this Japanese doctor.
An army doctor?
An army doctor. We did not torture him or harm him. In fact, we asked him to help treat our people who were sick, you know.
Did he do so?
Yes, he did. He seemed to be a very kind man.
How did you capture him?
I don't know how the comrades captured him, but when I was in the village of San Juan, this man was brought there. The Japanese was brought there. I met him. I shook hands with him. And he said, I am not in the combat forces. I'm a doctor. I only treated our people who are sick or wounded. And he says, in fact, I don't like this war. I'm forced into it because I'm a Japanese. He said, we did not harm him. In fact, we treated him as if he were a comrade. He ate with us, you know, and we joked with him.
In what language did you speak to him?
Could speak English. But eventually we turned him over to the Americans. So, what I'd like to say, maybe you could record this in the next recording that you'll make, that although the Hukbalhap was really the guerrilla force that fought the Japanese with great intensity in the Philippines, the United States Army did not regard the Philippines with sympathy or friendliness. When they came in, even in spite of the assistance and cooperation we gave them, they were very hostile to us, because they knew that the Hukbalhap was under the leadership of the Communist Party of the Philippines. They treated us with hostility. And while they treated this Yusafe with great friendship and comradeship. You know, gave them all the facilities, gave them all the help that they can give. But in our case, what they did is to arrest our commander-in-chief, Luis Taruk, arrested Castro Alejandrino, arrested Dimasalang, you know, one of our top leaders. And they were sent to the southern part of the Philippines in a place called Palawan. You know, the Palawan is the leper colony of the Philippines. They were in the leper colony in Palawan. They were there for a number of months. And it is only demonstration after demonstration that we stage in Manila. And popular pressure from the provinces of Central Luzon that led to the release of these comrades. You can see the top people of the Hukbalahap were arrested after all the help that we gave them. In fact, I would like to point out that the squadron who went into Manila with the American forces, after the work they had done, they were coming back to Bulacan because they are a squadron from Bulacan. And on their way, they were on foot. They were attacked by a group of Tulisafe, this Yusafe group, who are in league with Americans at that time. And all the people in this squadron were killed by the Tulisafe. And this was with the connivance of the American army. So, as I have pointed out, the Americans knew that the Hukbalahap is a force in the country which will eventually fight the imperialists from the United States. They were already aware that our forces, our people, are against the reoccupation of our country. The Filipino people thought this is the liberation of the Philippines from Japanese invaders and Japanese occupation. But the truth, from our standpoint, it is a reoccupation of American imperialists in our country. We are not free from foreign control. It's just a change of hands from Japanese to Americans.
At the end of the Second World War, what decision was taken about the future of the guerrilla movements, of the guerrilla units of the Hukbalahap? Did they stay in existence in August 1945, or were they disbanded?
Well, after the war, people were really very tired of the war and wanted to live peaceful, normal lives. And so did we, who were in the guerrilla movement. And all we wanted is to put away the arms and go back to work and help in the rehabilitation of the country, because the country was really ruined by the war. You know, the fight between the Americans and the Japanese and the fight of the Japanese with the guerrillas. So it was decided by our organization to disband the guerrilla units and go back to work. Most of our members are peasants, so they went back to the fields and began working in the fields. But they did not give up their arms because we were in a very unpleasant state of uncertainty. I think I've already told you that right after the war, the American army were hostile to us. In fact, some of our people had been arrested. I don't know if I told you that Luis Taruk, the chief commander of our forces, and Castro Alejandrino were arrested and sent to Iwahig Penal Colony in Palawan. That's an island in the south, the most southern part of the Philippines. In fact, it's a penal colony for lepers, and they were sent there. And these are our top leaders of the Hukbalahap. So we did not of course we disarmed, we put away the arms, but they were not surrendered to the authorities because we don't know what steps they would take. We saw that although the Osmeña government that came back with the Americans showed a somewhat impartial attitude towards the hooks, but we were not certain of the steps that the American army would take at that time. They were the all-powerful force in the Philippines. In fact, they dominated the President Osmeña's government. Osmeña's government was subsidiary or subservient to General MacArthur, who was the head of the military command in the Philippines. And we saw from the reaction of the American army that they were out to crush us because the Hukbalhab is communist-led. So we did not surrender our arms.
They were hidden away.
They were just put away, hidden among the in the fields, in holes in the fields, And we wanted the Osmeña government to recognize us as an entity that helped fight the enemy, the Japanese. But the American army as a whole had ominous intentions towards the Hukbalhab. We could already see it right from the start, because Squadron 77, I think, I can't remember if I have told you about this. Squadron 77, composed of Huk guerrilla people, some of them were even women, they came from Manila to help fight the Japanese. And when they were returning from Manila, they were waylaid on the way by this Yusafe. I think I've told you about the Yusafe. They were waylaid on the way and they were killed, all of them, with the consent of the American army. And we know that.
So when was the armed struggle against the Filipino government started?
Oh, it took some time, because the war ended in 1945. But so many things happened during that period when the president became Manuel Rojas. Manuel Rojas was a member of the cabinet of the puppet government under the Japanese. But because General MacArthur was not really interested whether you collaborated or not with the Japanese, they were just interested in reoccupying the country and in subjugating all the forces who to them are subversive. And they consider the communists as subversive. And because they know that the Hukbalhab has been led by the communists, then they intended to crush the Communist Party alongside the Hukbalhab. So there were indiscriminate arrest of civilians who lived in the villages where the Huk was very strong. There were killings, shootings, just indiscriminate shooting of people. There were arrests of our comrades whom they thought were, or they suspected of having been active in the Huk guerrillas. And in fact, there were looting, burning of houses in many, many villages in Central Luzon, where the Hukbalhab was very strong.
How did all this affect you personally?
Oh, I have to go underground. What I did is I don't stay in my parents' house. Luckily for me, I had relatives and friends who knew about my convictions, my political leanings. And so I would go to their houses and stay in their houses. Once in a while, I'll just creep into my own family house just to see my parents and get new clothes, and refurnish my needs. I couldn't stay home.
So you assumed a false identity? I
never used my name. I was known as Lydia. I was still known as Lydia.
But you were in Manila all the time?
Yes, I was in Manila, because my work then was our newspaper called Katubusan, of which I was editor during the Japanese occupation. But this newspaper has been expanded into a real printed newspaper. The katubusan that I turned out was mimeograph only. See, wartime newspaper. But now this is printed and it's legal. The editor of this is Heruncio La Cuesta. He is known. I was the assistant editor, but I was not known. I as a member of the underground. Because in our party, we decide who will come out openly and who will remain underground. And although I was working in the Katubusan, I had an underground existence. But Heruncio La Cuesta is the one who meets people, talks with people, have interviews, gives out statements. But I stayed in the background. Later on, I didn't like Heruncio La Cuesta, you know. I didn't get along with him because he courted me during the war and I did not reciprocate his good motives, and he was rather terse against me. He had already married somebody else, but he was rather, I would not say indifferent, in fact, even sometimes hostile. So I told our general secretary, I don't want to work with Heruncio. Could you please give me another job which you think I could fit in and my capabilities could be developed? He said, you must be the right person for this job, says, because we have formed a youth division and we are looking for the head of this division. And since you're still young, she said, would you like to be the head of the youth division of the party? You know, at those times, there are no elections because of the wartime conditions. So all positions in the party are appointments by the Politburo.
When was this?
This is 1946, after the war. So I welcomed the job because it's something I would like to do. I had been in the Youth Congress before, and I'm quite familiar with youth work. And in fact, when there was a demonstration in September of 1946 for our comrades who were arrested and sent to Iwahig Penal Colony.
How do you spell this?
Iwahig is spelled I-W-A-H-I-G. Iwahig Penal Colony. This is a compound for lepers, where they were not in the colony itself, but outside it. It's an island called Palawan in the south. In September of 1946, I remember this very well. We had a big demonstration in Manila, about 50,000 people, in which other progressive organizations participated, like the Democratic Alliance, like the League for the Defense of Democracy, you know, like the League of National Liberation, and trade union organizations, like the Congress of Labor, CLO, Congress of Labor Organization, PKM, that's the PKM means Pambansang Kaisahan ng Magbubukid, which means National Union of Peasants. Now, all these different progressive organizations came to Manila. A great number of peasants from Central Luzon came to Manila for a demonstration. 50,000 people attended this. And now that I've become the chairman of the youth division, we have organized a new youth organization called the Democratic Youth League. And this is the first time I ever faced an audience of 50,000 to speak, you know, as the head of the Democratic Youth League of the Philippines. I was trembling, you know, because this is the first time I go up on the platform and speak. So at this period, I was busy with this organization. And during this period, The Bell Trade Act was enacted in the United States, and it was to be ratified in the Philippines.
Which act?
It's called the Bell Trade Act. It was brought to Congress by a man whose name is Jasper Bell. That's why it's called the Bell Trade Act. And the whole objective of this Bell Trade Act, it's about trade between the Philippines and the United States. But the thing is, you can see from the provisions that they want to dump their, that the United States wanted to dump all their extra surplus goods in the Philippines. They wanted to invest heavily in the Philippines. And there is a very special provision in this Bell Trade Act which puts the Americans in parity with the Filipinos in investments in developing natural resources in the Philippines, which is very disadvantageous to us because they are rich and we are poor. So if they invest, they can in fact control our economy. Now, as our youth league concentrated on this issue, we organized meetings, rallies, demonstrations against the Bell Trade Act. This, I remember, was our main job when I was the the chairman of this organization. I remember going to the different secondary schools and giving speeches to different classrooms, asking them to come to this rally which we're preparing, this one I told you about. And this was very well attended. And out of this affair, I met some American GIs who were progressive. In fact, they were communists too. They congratulated me as I came down from the platform, and they asked me, can I come with them? Because they would like to interview me about many things that's happening in the Philippines. But I did not want to go with them alone as a woman. There were three GIs. So I asked a friend of mine who is also in the movement to come with me. Her name was Emma. So the two of us went to their office. The name of this man who interviewed me was Abraham Chapman. There were two other GIs with him. One was Justin Wonderland, and the other was Lou Moroz. We sat in the office, and I answered all their questions, and they were writing, you know. And then Abraham, I saw the efficiency of these people. I was so amazed, you know, right at that moment. Emma and I just sat down, these three GIs. One of them prepared the mimeograph. One of them prepared the typewriter. Abraham Chapman did the writing. And then Justin Wonderland typed it. Lou Moroz prepared the mimeograph. And they mimeographed things out. And then I just read what I had told them was all in the communique which they were going to send to the People's Daily World in California. And in fact, later they showed me the copy of this of the article they had written by Abraham Chapman.
Well, could these soldiers have been in trouble with the military authorities for doing this?
No, they were not. They were also doing this in an underground way. They're not telling their superior officers what they're doing. They're doing it on their own. Nobody knows what they're doing. They can get away with murder. I will tell you an incident which is very, very interesting. I met many American GIs who were communists. I didn't associate or had anything to do with other GIs, because other GIs are just looking for women, you know. But if he's a communist, I'm ready to meet an American GI because I know he's political. And any American GI who's a communist will want to know what is the real situation in the Philippines. And I met them because they come to the headquarters of our party. Our party at that time was legal.
Was legal.
I mean, it's open. The Congress of Labor Organizations, which is a trade union federation, it was founded by our party and it is very progressive policy. They usually come to the CL, we call it the CLO, and comrades in the CLO would invite me to come because there's a GI who's coming, and sometimes they, our people cannot speak English. I have the advantage of being able to act as interpreter, you know, between these trade union leaders who couldn't speak English and would like to communicate with American GIs, you see. So I met many GIs at that time.
So was it in this way that you met Phil Pomeroy?
No. I didn't meet him at that time. I met him later. He was a member of the forces of General MacArthur when they came in. I did not meet him, but he met Hooks, you know. In fact, Hook leaders, he met them in Fort Stutzenberg in Pampanga. Well, William Pomeroy was fascinated by the Hook movement, and he thought that after the war, when he is discharged from the army, he would come back to the Philippines and write a book about the Hook Balahap. And it was when he came back that I met him. But during that time, I met other GIs. Now, one fascinating experience I have with a GI whose name is Arthur Savage. I don't even know if he's still alive, but he is to me a very, very outstanding, outstandingly marvelous person. I did not know that Arthur Savage is in fact the director of a GI educational school. It's to educate the GIs while they are here, you know, to develop them to become more better citizens. Nothing to do with the army work, just to give them
education.
Well, one day he came to our headquarters and told the general secretary, "Yes, I would like to give you some things, you know, for which you can use. Could you prepare a truck? And you let Celia come, because it's good when there's a woman with the group." He says, "And Celia, will you please look as though you are a laundress, you know, one who you wear a faded dress and don't wear your shoes. Wear your bakya." You know, bakya means wooden shoes, because the laundresses who come to their camp do not wear shoes. You know, they wear bakya, which makes you look very provincial, and says don't wear anything fancy.